Hello, this is Lois Pausch reading the Vermilion County News for Friday, November the 30th. And the first article has the headline, Welcome Loves, Travel Stop Opens in Oakwood. Dateline Oakwood. It took 5 years of planning and work, but on Thursday morning, Oakwood officials celebrated the soft opening of the new Love's Travel Shop and Hardee's on the north side of Interstate 74. The more than 15,000 square foot facility at 17919 Newtown Road has created 70 new jobs in Vermilion County. It is open 24 hours a day and boasts 67 truck parking spaces. A few of Love's early customers on Thursday were Village Trustees Farrell Stroh and Bob Parr, who is also a former Oakwood mayor, along with former Oakwood mayor Robert Jennings. They drank coffee and checked out the newest development in their village. "The coffee is good," Jennings said. "You can judge a truck stop by their coffee." Parr added, "They have more coffee than anyone would ever need." Along one wall, Love's customers can select from several different blends of gourmet coffee, including house, Colombian, Brazilian, decaf, and dark. In front of the coffee bar, a wide variety of rotisserie hot dogs and bratwurst were roasting. A few Oakwood Junior High teachers stopped by Love's to grab some snacks on their way to school. The travel stop offers many amenities, including general merchandise, 7 private shower facilities, laundry facilities, 7 diesel bays, a cat scale, and a Speedco semi-trailer tire and repair shop. "The showers are snazzy," Stroh said as he expected one. The professional driver area, where clothing, coolers, and luggage can be found, is separate from the larger country store area where the general public would most likely frequent. The inside of Hardee's showcases 2 murals that depict the local area. One mural features the Oakwood Water Tower, wind turbines, and an Interstate 74 road sign. The other mural has an agricultural theme with a tractor, barn, American flag, and crop duster playing. "They didn't throw any old plane up there," Stroh said, recognizing the yellow crop duster as a familiar one that is used locally. "It's pretty neat, though." Stroh commented on the speed with which the interiors of Love's and Hardee's were completed. "I came here a week ago and it was empty inside. Then boom, they got it all done. I think this is going to be very nice for Oakwood," Stroh said. Aaron Negri, general manager of the Oakwood's Love's, said Thursday's soft opening allowed the employees to ease into their new roles. "We're testing the waters," he said. "We opened the doors at 6:30 a.m. 52 employees already have been hired, with an initial 13 being hired when the Speedco repair shop opens at the beginning of the year," Negri said. "It's a semi-tire car facility with some light mechanical repairs and oil changes," he said. "Eventually, the travel stop will serve hot-to-go meals such as breakfast sandwiches and corn dogs by February or March," Negri said, adding that depending on how well received those fruit items are, the menu could continue to expand. Love's plans a grand opening ribbon-cutting ceremony at 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, December 18th, during which time Love's will make a $2,000 donation to the Village of Oakwood for its Veterans Park on Barbara Lane. Jennings, Parr, and Stroh discussed how Stroh's opening on Thursday has been in the works for a long time. The site was formerly home to the I-74 Auto Truck Plaza that closed in October 2007 and then sat abandoned for more than 10 years after the property went into foreclosure sometime in 2013. And its former owners returned to India, the Village of Oakwood ended up taking possession of the parcel in mid-2014 after agreeing to pay Cranberry Financial LLC $10,000 for promissory notes and the mortgage. After the village gained possession of the property, 10 underground fuel storage tanks were removed and work began last year to clean the contaminated soil at the site using leaking underground storage tanks funds from the IEPA. Love's Travel Stops and Country Stores of Oklahoma City purchased the 18-acre site for $342,500 in October 2015. Jennings, who was Oakwood's mayor back in 2013, when efforts began to redevelop the property, said when they started construction on this, it was a wow day. But now today, this is awesome. This is wonderful for us. And the next article has the headline, Local Children Have Parts in Nutcracker. Dateline Danville. For some people, the Christmas season kicks off with store sales, church bazaars, and holiday baking. But music lover Mimi Reitmeier knows better. When you see the Nutcracker early, that's the beginning of Christmas. That's the kickoff. It's an enchanting afternoon. Reitmeier, 84, plans to be in the audience Sunday when the Danville Symphony Orchestra and the Springfield Ballet Company present the timeless classic. The performance, which features local children, will start at 3 p.m. in the Dick Van Dyke Auditorium at Danville High School, 202 East Fairchild Street. It's a great holiday tradition, DSO music director Jeremy Swirling said. A lot of people have been to it more than once. Grandparents especially enjoy bringing their grandchildren. The ballet company will bring numerous backdrops and fantasy sets, more than 150 costumes and special effects that are perfect for Clara's magical dream world adventure. Based on The Nutcracker and the King of Mice, written by E.T.A. Hoffman, the story takes place on Christmas Eve, 1830. After she receives a nutcracker as a gift, a young German girl dreams of Nutcracker Prince and his fierce battle against a mouse king, and travels to the land of sweets where she meets the Sugar Plum Fairy. The show's music was composed by Tchaikovsky. Local dance schools involved are the Laurel School of Dance, Maryland's Dance Works, and Jody's Dance Unlimited. About 30 show choir students with Northridge School will sing at the end of Act 1 under the direction of Jennifer Woodrow. The ballet company will bring in about 80 cast and crew members, Swirling said. Reitmeier, a founding member of DSO and the Symphony Guild, has loved the Nutcracker all her life. As a child growing up in Lafayette, Indiana, she studied dance for 10 years and performed in the Waltz of the Flowers, which is an all-ballet part of the Nutcracker. She enjoyed taking her granddaughter to performances, and the girl would dance in the hall during intermission. The granddaughter, now 31, still talks about it. In fact, Reitmeier said the Nutcracker makes a wonderful afternoon for both boys and girls. Boys usually enjoy the toy soldiers, and many girls like the frilly costumes. She said, the production is always exciting. It's a memory maker, she said. It will become a tradition. Reitmeier also used to collect nutcrackers, and at one point had more than 100. Her late husband, Lou, made one that was more than 6 feet tall for the Danville Symphony Orchestra's gala auction a few years ago. She had to sell most of her Nutcracker items when she downsized. The DSO tries to bring in the Nutcracker every few years, Swirling said. It's one of the great things that the Danville Symphony Orchestra can do every 3, 4, or 5 years, Swirling said. Otherwise, people have to travel out of town to see the full ballet. In the past, a Chicago ballet company has come in, but Swirling thought it was time for a change. Last year, he saw the Springfield Ballet Company perform the Nutcracker, describing the show as spectacular. In addition to younger leads, the sets were spectacular, he said. The board agreed to invite them, so they will be coming to town for the second time. The performance also is a good chance for the Springfield dancers to perform with a live orchestra, he said. Each annual DSO performance is underwritten by the Julius W. Hegeler II Foundation as part of an endowment recognized in perpetuity. The symphony will also participate in the downtown Danville Christmas Parade next week in collaboration with the DLO Musical Theater to promote the combined production of Disney's Beauty and the Beast in March. DSO and DLO will combine to create a flow. And the next article has the headline, School Village Board Election Filings Start December 10th. Vermillion County Clerk Kathy Judkins reminds candidates that all Vermillion County School District Board members and Vermillion Regional Board of School Trustees will be filing at the Vermillion County Clerk's Office beginning December 10th. The consolidated election is April 2nd, 2019. Nomination petitions and other filing forms are available at the Vermillion County Clerk's Office. Inside the Vermillion County Administration Building, 201 North Vermillion Street, in the former federal courthouse building through December 17th, and petitions are currently being circulated. Filing for these positions will take place beginning at 8 a.m. December 10th through 5 p.m. December 17th. Candidates who file simultaneously for the same office in the same district, either at 8 a.m. on December 10th or within the last hour on December 17th, will be included in a lottery to determine ballot position. Candidates who file after 8 a.m. on the first day shall be deemed filed in the order of actual receipt. All potential candidates should contact the county clerk's office to ascertain which district format their school elects board members and from which areas in the district candidates may be elected. All other offices include city, village, mayor, or president, clerk, commissioners, trustees, aldermen, library district trustees, township and municipal library trustees, park district commissioners or trustees, community college district trustees, fire protection district trustees, and township land commissioners will file with their local election official, clerk, or secretary. For any questions, contact Lindsay Light, Chief Deputy County Clerk, Supervisor of Elections, at 217-554-1911 or ccelections@vercounty.org. And now for the obituaries. And the first is for Letha L. Fitzwater, 84, of Georgetown, who died on Wednesday, November 28, 2018. A celebration of her life will be held at 1 p.m. Tuesday, December 4th at Sunset's Houghton Leisure Funeral Home, 200 East West Street, Georgetown, with Pastor John Goldfuss officiating. Visitation will be from 3 to 5, 7 p.m. Monday, December 3rd at the funeral home. She will be laid to rest in Thomas Cemetery, Newport, Indiana. Memorial donations may be given to the Martha Smith / Shirley Mullins Fund. And the next is for Edward Hillman III, 26, of Armstrong, who died on Sunday in Nebraska. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Blurton Funeral Home, Potomac, 400 North Vermillion Street, Potomac. And the next is for Elizabeth Kirby Ferguson, 29, of Rossville, who died on Wednesday, November 28, 2018, in St. Louis. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Blurton Funeral Home, Hoopston, 209 East Washington Street, Hoopston. And the next is for Carolyn Pierce, 87, of Tucson, Arizona, formerly of Rossville, died on Sunday, November 25th, in Tucson. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Blurton Funeral Home, Hoopston, 309 East Washington Street, Hoopston. And the next is for Robert Golding, 73, of Oakwood, who died on Sunday at home. A memorial service is scheduled at a later date. Rourke Vet Funeral Services, 3 South Hodge Street. Tilton is in charge of arrangements. And the next is for Christine Tucker Deacon, 68, of Danville, who died on Wednesday, November 28th at home. Arrangements were incomplete at Pape Family Funeral Home, 10 East William Street, Danville. And the next is for Kathy Washington, whose homecoming celebration will commence at 1 p.m. Monday, December 3rd at Emmanuel Tabernacle, MBC, 216 South Oakley Boulevard, Chicago. Visitation will be from noon until time of service. Her body will lie in state on Thursday, November 29th from 1 to 5 p.m. at Leek & Sons Funeral Home, Danville. Pastor Tina Ramey will officiate, and eulogist will be the Reverend Ralph Ramey, Jr. And the next is for Jack Graham, who died on November 28th. A celebration of his life will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, December 1st, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville, with Pastors Ramey Gordon and Dave Hastings officiating. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, November 30th, that's today, at the funeral home. Burial will be held at Sunset Memorial Park. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Central Park Church of Christ, 1735 South Washington Street, Tilton, 61833. And the next is for Eleanor Haugen, H-A-U-G-E-N, 94 of Westville, who died on Sunday, November 25th, in Crispin. A memorial service will be held at noon Saturday, December 1st, at Sunset Urbis Funeral Chapel, 414 South State Street, Westville. Visitation will be held from 10 a.m. to noon on Saturday prior to her service at the funeral home. And now there's some sports news. And the first has the title, Ladies of the Ring. Dateline Danville, with the accomplishment of last season being celebrated, the Schlarman girls basketball team are still focused on the challenges of this season. The Hilltoppers picked up their rings from winning the IAHSA Class 1A state title and also saw a banner celebrating the accomplishment introduced. Then they had to go to business. The business was Bismarck Henny, Rossville Albin, and the Hilltoppers were up to the challenge with a 52-29 win on Thursday at Chevy Gym. Schlarman coach Keith People said the challenge the Blue Devils did was to change up on defense. They came out with a box one defense, which was a change from their traditional man-to-man, People said. When you do that, it gives you a lot of chances to take three-pointers, and we were able to take advantage. The Hilltoppers showed they were ready and hit 8 three-pointers to keep the Blue Devils from ruining the night. Janiah Newell had 3 trays and ended up leading Schlarman with 13 points, while Cindy Guard had 10. Tana Cedar and Destiny Dye each had 8. Anaya Peoples had 7, and Capria Brown added 6. Emily Meidel had 13 for BHRA, while Annie Nelson, Sophia Rome, Emma Clapp, and Sierra Bryant each had 4 points. Keith Peoples said the event was a perfect topping to the accomplishments from last season's title run. It was an exciting evening, and it was great to see a lot of people who were instrumental in the season from announcers, scorekeepers, fans in the community, People said. It was great to remember everything that happened last season for one last time before we can fully focus on this season. That focus continues on to Saturday when the Hilltoppers 5-1 will host Tutopolis. This is what the non-conference schedule is about in facing the best teams around, and we know we are going to get their best, People said. We know that we are going to see everyone's best defense and offense, and we are going to work hard against everyone to get prepared for the last 7 games of the season. And the next is an article with the headline, Danville Splits with Centennial Unity, Dateline Danville. With very few opportunities to wrestle in a home meet, it's understandable why Danville seniors Anthony Turner and Kevin Sanchez were disappointed on Thursday night, but they had different reasons. Turner was the recipient of 2 wins by forfeit against Champaign Centennial in Unity, while Sanchez was in street clothes after suffering a shoulder injury, please forgive me, in the Bradley Bourbonnais Super Duels. The Vikings came away with a split decision in the triangular meet, defeating the Centennial Charges 42-33, but suffering a 48-36 loss to the Unity Rockets. Anthony was upset that he didn't get a chance tonight, but teams are not going to throw someone out there against him, said Tedder of his 3-time state qualifier, including a 4th place finish last year at 132 pounds. Kevin is going to stay out for at least another week. He was itching to get back on the mat tonight, but he couldn't get released by the doctor. With those 2 seniors watching from the mat's edge, Tedder saw some other wrestlers step up into big roles for the Vikings. Danville Dominic Perez and Eliseo Perez went 2-0 for Danville in the triangular, with both wrestlers securing pins in matches against Unity and Centennial. Dominic Perez only had 6 wins all of last year. And after those 2 tonight, he already has 5 this season, Tedder said. I also thought that El Liceo did some good stuff tonight. Danville will only be was only able to fill 10 of 14 weight classes on Thursday night, and those four forfeits in the match against Unity cost the Vikings an opportunity for a team victory. In the match with Centennial, both teams forfeited at four weights, and there was one double forfeit between the Big 12 rivals. And the next article has the headline, French Toller Get Into the Swing of College Golf. Dateline, Danville. Terry French and Debbie Toller are recognized names around Danville golf courses. So when it came time for Danville Area Community College to restart its men's golf program and begin a women's golf program, it only made sense that athletics director Tim Button went after them to lead the Jaguar programs. French and Toller were officially hired by the school earlier this month, and now comes the hard part for them, getting players into the program. I'm honored that I was asked to be the coach, Toller said. It's something that I thought about before, but I never really approached anyone about becoming a coach. This is going to be a great opportunity for these young ladies to come to DACC for a great education and play some golf. For French, it's going to mean double duty as he is still going to be the head coach at Bismarck Henning Rossville Albin. I'm going to continue coaching them with some help, he said. I have 18 years invested in that program, and I've always said that those kids become my family. I don't want to leave them. I did some research when this opportunity presented itself, with the high school season being in the fall and the college season in the spring. I think it should make this possible. I might have to work a few more hours and take more vacation days for my full-time job at Danville Metal Stamping, but my kids bust their butts for me. I figure I can bust my butt for them. Recruiting players to the collegiate level is something new for both Toller and French. I'm calling all the high schools in the area, both Indiana and Illinois, trying to get the word out there, Toller said. I know there are a lot of girls out there who are playing golf, and we have scholarships to offer for them to get a good education. French admits that he is tapping into resources with nearly 20 years of experience on the high school level. I've already got a couple of high school kids interested in the program, and hopefully we are able to get them signed in the next week or so, said French. I've also got a former golfer of mine from Bismarck who might also be coming back to play for me. Naming the two coaches is a big step in the process of adding the two sports at Danville Area Community College. The next step is securing a home course and putting together a schedule. The Danville Area Community College men's and women's golf teams will officially start with the 2019-2020 season. And now a couple of opinion pieces, and the first one has the headline, Whittling Government Excess, Start with the Townships. A quick quiz about government spending. Should the purchase of a $329 Levenger purse be considered a legitimate government expense? What about bills for dinner and drinks at Hooters or tickets to Disneyland? Or $349 for cashmere and cardigan sweaters and a wool coat? The answer is no way, underlined and in bold. Yet, these are expenses charged to township credit cards at the Algonquin Township Highway Commissioner's Office when it was led by Robert Miller, the Tribune's Robert McCoppin reports. Those and other expenses paid for with taxpayer money under Miller's watch are now the subject of a lawsuit filed by the current Highway Commissioner, Andrew Gasser, who is challenging their validity. Misuse of taxpayer money happens everywhere in government, but township governments are especially prone to it. Why? Because when it comes to visibility, townships are the dark web of local government in Illinois. It's a fair bet that most Illinoisans don't know who their township officials are, let alone what townships do. Here's a primer. I'm not sure how that word is pronounced. Township government in Illinois has three functions: repair of roads not maintained by other levels of government, functions related to property assessment, and financial assistance for the poor through services such as food banks. These are all functions that have merit and that, as in many states, can be provided by municipal and or county governments. Here's something you probably didn't know about township government in Illinois. There are 1,428 townships. A big reason this state has more units of local government than any other. By contrast, many states don't see a need for any township governments. In southern Illinois, 17 counties don't use township government, and they get along just fine. Townships are America's oldest unit of government, predating the Declaration of Independence. They may have had utility in bygone days when riding a horse-drawn wagon to and from the county seat was a substantial journey. So we're hard-pressed to find reasons why townships are needed today. That said, township officials desperate to keep their sometimes well-pensioned jobs are a well-organized lobby. When this editorial appears, we'll expect the self-praising letters to editor in 3, 2, 1. Ever so slowly, local governments are realizing this expensive obsolescence and opting to jettison their township bureaucracies. One of the most recent prominent examples is Evanston. In 2014, voters chose to abolish Evanston Township and have the city governments take over what the township did. As a result, Evanston taxpayers saved nearly $800,000 the year after the township disbanded. That should inspire other cities and counties to jump on the bandwagon. The alleged shenanigans in Algonquin Township, which the Tribune reports are under investigation by the McHenry County State's Attorney's Office, have led to legislation proposed in Springfield that would allow voters in McHenry County to decide through a referendum whether to eliminate their township governments. Last year, residents of Cook County's Northwest Suburban Hanover Township voted to eliminate the township's road district and highway commissioner. In DuPage County, voters in Naperville and Lyle opted to combine their township road districts, a move that was estimated to save $800,000 to $1.4 million annually. That's progress, but it's a trickle. It's time township abolition became a torrent, and that's from the Chicago Tribune. And the next is a columnist. Her name is Froma Harrop, and the titles of her column is Opponents Feed Trump Media Machine. The time has come for Donald Trump's critics to take a much-deserved vacation from all things Donald Trump. The media especially can use this time to work on dropping their obsession, to obsess on every lie, insult, and provocation he crafts for their consumption. This invitation extends to participants in social media, which, after all, are media also. It's slowly dawning on the anti-Trump camp that repeating every inanity only feeds the propaganda machine. Attaching condemnation matters not. Just typing Trump's affronts, word for word, amplifies them. You know what they say about how lies replayed and replayed start being taken as truth. George Lakoff, a linguist who advises Democrats, vents frustration at how cleverly Trump manipulates the professional media. Trump has turned words into weapons, he recently said, and he's winning the linguistic wars. Journalists have been trained to repeat what officials, especially the president, say, Lakoff said. What it does is keep the lies out there. What should traditional media do? Make clear he's lying, tell what the lie is, then go back to the truth. If there are part-truths in what he's saying, then by all means include them. Happily, respected news sources are getting better at treating the raw sewage before sending it through their pipes to the public. When Trump lies, they are now less inclined to copy-paste his statements in the headline. Instead, they center on the truth he's dismantling. Trump is very good at framing his tweets. Through word choice, he decides what the story is. And I'm going to have to stop there. My time is up. I look forward to reading with you again next week. This is Lois Pausch reading the Vermilion County News for Friday, November 30th. Goodbye for now.